this is Hannah, and you're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane
88.1. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal. Well, good afternoon, out and abouters. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 or 92.3 FM. Also streaming from KYRS.org. You will be, if you stay tuned, and I hope you do, you will be listening to the show Out and About, because I am your host, Maeve, and that is the show that I do, is Out and About. And it's another beautiful day in Spokane, and I have some friends in the studio with me from, as you've been probably noticing, I've been playing a lot of No King stuff, and people think that that sort of thing just happens. Well, it doesn't. It takes people making the thing happen, and I have in the studio right now with me, I have Sammy Perry and Mike Bell from Spokane Indivisible. Hi, you guys. How's it going?
Hi. Thank you so much for having us.
Glad to be here.
It's good to have you guys. So why don't you just kind of go ahead. You could probably figure out which one's Mike and which one's Sammy, but go ahead and say your name and what is your job at Spokane Indivisible?
Well, I'm Sammy Perry, and I am on the mic, and then I also head the advocacy group for Spokane Indivisible.
And Mike, how about you?
Well, I'm sort of the technical advisor for the Indivisible group. Healthcare is a big issue these days, and they were looking for somebody that had some expertise in that area, and I'm retired, and I've got free time, and I spent 35 years working with hospitals and clinics, and so I know healthcare pretty well.
Well, we're going to pick your brain on that big time. So a steering committee, is that sort of what you decide, like what projects you're going to do? Is that what a steering committee does?
No, actually our steering committee is the boss of all of us.
Okay.
They're the ones that keep us in line, make sure we're doing it correctly.
Okay. So why don't we, what Spokane Indivisible, people think that, you know, I hear a lot of coverage of No Kings, and it's always like, oh, whoever puts this thing on, they ought to be like, people don't really know that it's Spokane Indivisible that is sort of the driving force behind this, right?
Yes, it's actually several Indivisible groups, because Spokane Indivisible is just one of about 14 in the Eastern Washington.
Oh, there's that many in Eastern Washington.
Wow. And then there's other grassroots groups that have joined us too, that are, we just have a leader from each one of those groups, Indivisibles. There's about nine of us that are on the planning committee.
Okay. And that in Spokane Indivisible actually got started back during the first Trump administration,
2017.
Right? Yeah. Have you noticed kind of a difference in the people participating this time around?
Well, I can tell you this. We started out, I mean, even when I joined the group in 2017, there was, you know, maybe 200 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it stayed right around 400. And right at the time that Trump 2.0, and now we've got well over 4,000 members.
Wow.
And that's just our group. That's just Spokane Indivisible.
Yeah.
So,
and what kind of, now people think, well, what's going on? Is there anything going on between the No Kings protests? And there is. I mean, if people are paying attention, they're seeing it. But what are some of the things that you guys are doing?
Yeah, we've got some things going on. This Christmas, we're going to be down at the Skywalks singing Christmas carols, probably with a little bit different words they originally were created.
IWW Wobbly. Yeah,
and
excellent.
There's visibility brigade that goes on over the freeway, I-90, several different overpasses, five actually. And then January 6th, we're working on an event right now because that's going to be our next protest.
Okay. Have you guys ever had like somebody say, you know, I really didn't think it was that bad, but you guys have kind of raised my awareness of this. I mean,
Yeah. It's that bad.
Yeah. I mean, people are able to finally maybe, I think some people are in so deep, it's kind of hard to leave once you've been on this trajectory. Now, we're going to talk about the healthcare aspect of what you're involved in, but are there any specific programs that you're doing to kind of address what's going to happen or just getting the word out?
Yeah, so we've been working on presentations. So we do those in the local libraries around Spokane. We were actually supposed to have one tonight and things just didn't work out. We were sorry we had to cancel, but there will be another one in January. And if people read Spokane Indivisible 24 on Substack, I send out newsletters a couple of times a week, that information will be in it and can sign up to attend the presentation.
And I'm not just saying this to be nice to my guests, because as guests know, I'm usually not that nice. but your writing's outstanding in it.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, really, it's informative and it's entertaining, and there's lots of photos and facts, and I would recommend anybody subscribing to the Substack, which I think also gets you an email, right? You can get an email newsletter, basically.
And it's all free.
Yeah. It's fantastic. So, okay, let's dive a little bit into the healthcare thing, and then we're going to, you know, we got about 15 minutes to talk about that, and we have to take our break, and we'll come back to it as well. But what is going on in this big, beautiful bill that's going to pass? What's going on with healthcare, thanks to Michael Baumgartner, Republicans, and Trump, and basically them not having any spine to stand up against him?
Well, the one big, beautiful bill has provisions in it that are going to affect anybody that accesses healthcare. The big one that a lot of people are familiar with is the Medicaid cuts. And based on information that we have, 1 in 4 Medicaid recipients will lose their coverage. That nationwide, that's going to cost $911 billion. And the thing to keep in mind, the Republicans are saying, you know, this is all savings. We're going to save money. But when an individual loses their Medicaid coverage, they aren't going to be able to buy health insurance. They can't afford it. They don't have cash. And so they're going to end up seeking free care. And that free care comes from hospitals. All providers within the healthcare system can deny coverage to anybody if you don't have insurance and you don't have cash. But hospitals, by law, have to provide coverage to anybody that shows up, regardless of their ability to pay. So my own opinion, I concentrate on the numbers, I guess. But my own opinion is that there is no savings. There's a shift of $911 billion from the national federal government to the local communities, because the local communities are going to have to provide all that free care and get nothing for it. So right now, almost all hospitals in the country incur a certain amount of what they call uncompensated care, bad debts and charity care. That number is going to go up. And right now, even without the big, beautiful bill, they're struggling to make ends meet with the amount of uncompensated care that they're forced to provide. And this is going to increase. In fact, their uncompensated care is going to go up about 60%. So that's the Medicaid part. And we've been in meetings where I've asked people, how many of you know somebody that's on Medicaid? Everybody raises their hand. Well, how many of those individuals are guilty of waste, fraud, and abuse? Nobody. There is no waste, fraud, and abuse when it comes to individuals.
It's so vetted. I mean, it is so scrutinized, any claim you make.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So I've had Medicare recipients say, well, I'm not on Medicaid. It won't affect me. Actually, it will, because the big, beautiful bill also generated about $3 trillion in deficit. And as deficit spending occurs, then Medicare is subject to something called sequestration. 3% reduction in payments per year the first year, the second year it's 6, the third year it's 9, and on and on. And a lot of people are having a hard time, if they've got Medicare, finding a physician that'll take the payments. And if they start dropping the payments, that's going to make it even worse. And those that are on Medicare managed care, the managed care insurance companies are also going to see that kind of reduction. So they're going to
be a Medicare Advantage.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. And so that's going to cause Medicare Advantage companies to stop providing the coverage. You lose your coverage, you have to find some other Medicare Advantage company to provide the care, or you have to go out and find a physician that'll take Medicare. Well, the, you know, God help you if you have to go out and find a physician that'll take direct Medicare.
Yeah.
They just, they're few and far between.
You know, and this thing about the hospitals having to pick up, you know, people going to the ER for colds or whatever, minor things, and the hospital having to eat the costs. Do they actually eat the costs, or will they pass those costs along to people who have to pay for?
Well, that's a great question. The third part of this is the private insurance. We're aware that a lot of people that have their insurance subsidized by HCA are losing that, and their premiums are going up 2 to 3 times that much. But people that have other insurance that's not subsidized by HCA are looking at 25 to 40% increases. Well, why is that? Well, the insurance companies can see that as this uncompensated care goes up, the hospitals are going to want to raise their rates. Right now, if you've got private insurance and you go to a hospital, you're not only paying for your care, but you're paying an extra 25% to cover people that don't pay their bills, that are indigent, or for whatever reason, they're getting free care. And with the big, beautiful bill, that 25% is going to end up being 35%. So that's one of our problems that we've got with the uncompensated care. In fact, my own opinion after working with hospitals for 35 years is that uncompensated care is the reason the healthcare system is broken. You know, if you go to Canada, you go to European countries, everybody gets healthcare.
Yeah.
And it's provided by their national government, whatever form that is. Here in this country, the burden of uncompensated care falls on the local communities. So I worked with a lot of rural hospitals. So when they're stuck with additional uncompensated care, they've got several choices. They can raise their rates 25% or whatever. They can cut back on the services that they provide, and that'll help some. Or they can go to the voters and say, we need more tax support. And unfortunately, the rate increase is not going to help them, because they've got very few people in the rural areas that pay or have private insurance. Most are Medicare and Medicaid, and you can raise the rates all you want to. Medicare and Medicaid not going to pay any more than they're already required to pay. And cutting costs, well, they've already cut back. They've gotten rid of OB. They've gotten rid of surgery. They've gotten rid of everything that they can get rid of. They're paying their staff less than what the market would require in many cases. And going to the voters, in many cases, these small rural hospitals are already getting $1 million a year from the local taxpayers, and most of that's going to pay for uncompensated care. So now they're going to be forced to go to the community and say, you know, if you want us to continue, we're going to need another $500,000 a year.
And rural communities probably are not going to be very supportive of that, I would think.
No, they're already stretched pretty thin.
Yeah.
And I think the rural hospitals are the canaries in the coal mine. When they start disappearing, then we know that it's not only a problem in rural areas, but in the bigger urban areas too. I mean, if you think about it, Sacred Heart provides a lot of uncompensated care. And if that goes up 60%, that's going to cost them a lot of money.
Yeah, I was a paramedic and fire captain for the Spokane Fire Department. And so that was, you know, we were a conveyor belt for people with, you know, after the ACA that changed. But you know, it was just so many people that just would go to the ER for really for a cold, for, you know, I had one guy want to go for athlete's foot, you know, things like that. So one of the things that I think may be a little bit confusing for people is when the big, beautiful bill passed, when the Republicans, including Michael Baumgartner, decided to stick it to their constituents, their thought was, this is not going, we'll put it in that these changes do not take effect until after the midterms, and then I'll be safe. But now we're seeing people seeing that their rates are going to go up. And so was that a miscalculation, or are we talking about two different things? Are we talking about the ACA and then also maybe conflating that with Medicaid? Is that what's going on in that?
They're two different things, but they're all part of the one big beautiful bill. At the time that bill was passed, they could have included a continuation of the subsidies, but they chose not to do that. And if you talk to Baumgartner, he says, well, you know, we're not going to make our children pay for this cost, and we're not going to increase the deficit and blah, 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 the standard BS. But he didn't have any problem voting for a $4 trillion tax cut for the rich.
Yeah.
So,
or bailing out a foreign country's government, you know, I mean, that was Trump unilaterally, but he certainly supports anything he does.
So. Well, and you have to wonder, Trump doesn't do anything unless there's something in it for him. So
yeah.
What was in it for him? You can use your imagination. And
yeah. Well, yeah. I heard, and maybe as a working in the industry, that there's these healing beds, that's going to be the
med beds.
Medbed, that's what they are. The Trump care.
They're magical.
It's, you get in them and they're just going to heal everything.
Yes.
You know, that the people who are still part of this cult, the rubes that still support this, I mean, I think a person can make a lot of money right now saying, get on the ground floor of these med beds.
Yes.
You know, it's time to invest.
We should look into it.
We really should. I mean, Well, part of this thing too, we're already seeing rural hospitals starting to close. What is the cause of that? What's going on?
Well, let me tell you a story. So I was a CPA. I worked with hundreds of rural hospitals. I had 20 CPAs working for me. So I did nothing but healthcare. And about 12 years ago, I was at a hospital, or actually outside of a hospital, talking to a gentleman. He was a Republican. I, because I worked in rural communities, I don't care what your political nature is. I was there to help the hospitals meet the needs of the community, and I did not do politics. Anyway, we were chatting, and I asked him, I said, what is the most important thing to you in your community? And he said, the hospital, pointed to the hospital. And I said, you know, I worked for your hospital as the outside accountant for 25 years. And he goes, no, I didn't know that. I go, yeah, I did. And 3 years ago, your hospital was on the verge of going under. Bad debts and charity care, that uncompensated care, was going up by 25 to 30% a year. $1 million turned into $2 million. Within a three-year period, and you all you had no cash, you'd borrowed all you could borrow, the community didn't have any more money for you, and you were on the verge of going under, and all of a sudden your bad debts dropped by 65%. 65% in 1 year, and that's what saved you. And the gentleman said, well, that's amazing. What caused that? And I would ask your listeners, well, there's only one answer. It was the Affordable Care Act, that they required employers to provide health care. They expanded Medicaid. They did everything they could do. And that hospital survived, along with a lot of the others, because of the Affordable Care Act. They recognized that was a problem 15 years ago when that was passed. I get angry when the Republicans claim that the reason we're in this fix right now is because of the Affordable Care Act. No, that's a lie. That we've we were saved by the Affordable Care Act, and that was the first step in fixing the healthcare system. Unfortunately, we haven't had any fixes since then. In fact, the same gentleman I was talking to him, I said, so a vote against the Affordable Care Act is a vote to close your hospital. And he goes, yeah, I can see your point. And I go, so your representative voted 50 times against the Affordable Care Act, which means she voted 50 times to close your hospital. Why are you voting for her? And there was no answer. He decided he had something better to do.
Yeah.
And I got the deer in the headlights look.
Yeah.
Well, Bumgardner is the same song, second verse. He claims that he's the champion of rural health care.
Right.
But the figures indicate that of the $911 billion in cuts, $137 billion are in rural areas. So those communities are going to have to come up with $137 billion over the next 10 years to be in a position where they're at now. And Bumgardner said, well, but I'm a champion because I came up with $50 billion in money specifically for rural hospitals or healthcare. And I think about it, it's like, well, they didn't teach math at Harvard. Because
yeah.
When you take $137 billion away and you give back $50, that's not being a champion of healthcare at all. In fact, when the bill first went through the House, it didn't have the $50 billion in it, and he voted yes. It was only when it got to the Senate that some of the Republican senators insisted on adding the $50
billion. So that wasn't even his doing. He was going to support it no matter what.
Right. And then it went back to the House, and of course, he voted, you know, for it. But to claim he was a big part of that $50 billion, that's a lie. In fact, it upsets me every time he comes out with a newsletter. I can go through paragraph after paragraph on healthcare issues and find one lie after the other. In fact, Sammy and I were talking about starting a contest on identifying how many lies are in his newsletters and maybe giving a prize to the person that came up with the most.
That would be
monetary prize.
Yeah, that would be really good.
Yeah,
that'd be really good. And you could just award the prize. It'd be a great photo opportunity.
Yes.
And you know, I think it's interesting that conversation you had with, I got so much to talk about, but I got to do this, load up our stuff, or I'm already 2 minutes behind schedule. But we'll come back. We're going to talk more about this. I hope all the questions I have stay in my little head until then. So everybody stay tuned. I'm going to play a little bit of music while I load up my spots. Here we go. and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street in Spokane. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. Support for Out and About comes from Eastern Washington University Running Start, where high school students can earn tuition-free credit before graduating. Applications at ewu.edu/runningstart. Support for Out and About comes from the nonprofit Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture in Spokane. Now presenting Preston Singletary, Raven and the Box of Daylight, bringing the Tlingit creation story to life. And Fire, Rebirth and Resilience, exploring our region's major fires from the Great Fire of 1889 to today. More information at northwestmuseum.org.
U.S. citizens wishing to contact their representatives in Congress about legislative issues can visit www.house.gov. Click the representatives link for a state-by-state directory that provides web links and current contact information.
KYRS Thin Air Community Radio provides our region with information that might be omitted, overlooked, or even censored by mainstream media. Your radio station is powered by the communities they serve and our radio programs as rich and diverse as the Spokane community itself. Please make a pledge today by texting Give KYRS to the number 44321. Your support ensures that KYRS can continue to celebrate the rich diversity of our community.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Out and About, and I'm talking to my friends from Spokane Indivisible, and we are talking about healthcare. And Mike Bell, he has a background at it as a CPA that served a lot of rural hospitals. Sammy Perry, she's part of the writes the fantastic Substack newsletter. Before we broke, we were talking about you're talking to a Republican who really valued the hospital, but not being able to really connect the dots between his vote and the destruction of the hospital that he loved. And I think, isn't it true that like a majority of even Republicans support the ACA by this point?
Well, let me just say that in the rural communities, they all have hospitals, and it's primarily because of HCA.
Yeah.
It's my understanding 1 in 4 farmers get their health insurance that's subsidized through the HCA. In fact, these healthcare cuts that are occurring, they're going to be predominantly in rural areas.
Yeah.
And people that voted for Trump and people that voted for Baumgartner.
Yeah.
And so I don't get how you can treat your own supporters so poorly, but that's what's going on.
I wish I could say some other words besides I think it's a cult, because I just think that there's different levels of things that they let go. Like, you know, Michael Baumgartner would not be standing by right now letting Joe Biden just bomb boats. You know, that wouldn't happen. So it's like you have like these different levels of, you know, you let your cult leader get away with anything. But I think there was such a hit job done in Democrats, you know, starting with Rush Limbaugh and stuff, that people have been brainwashed so bad that they are unable, they are physically unable to mark the D, even if it means that it would save their lives. They just can't do it. And I don't know, how do we ever fix that? I mean, that's a big question.
It's education. I mean, we just have to make sure that they understand what they're voting for.
When you confront people that are strictly based on feelings with facts, can you sway them?
I don't know. You know, we've talked about this a lot. I have a neighbor whose dad is a wheat farmer. And she says that the Republican Party in the farming communities is a religion. Huh. And that it wouldn't make any difference at all who's running. If they have a D next to their name, they're not going to vote for them. And if they don't think the Republican is up to their standards, they won't vote at all.
Yeah, which is funny because, you know, Michael Baumgartner supposedly is Catholic, but his every decision he makes is really against any kind of Catholic doctrine that there is. You know, yeah. it's just shameful.
Very shameful.
And yeah, so
you raise a good question though, because how bad does it have to be out in farm country for them to start behaving differently? The tariffs have wiped out all of their markets, foreign markets. The crop prices are down to next to nothing. They're spending more money growing crops than they can ever sell them for. Their equipment is costing more. And now their health insurance is either going to cost more or go away.
Yeah.
And yet they're not standing up and saying enough's enough. I'm trumped out. And so now they're reverting to handouts.
Yeah.
I mean, how
socialism.
Sad, yeah. How sad is it when proud farmers are having to beg the administration for handouts?
And just the lies that we have all this money. We've got trillions of dollars that we brought in from tariffs, which is a lie. And we're able to dip into that trillions and get $100 billion to pay to subsidize farmers because I destroyed their soybean industry, because I destroyed all these industries. You know, you think about how many apples get imported to China. I would imagine they probably have gone to other countries for their apple supply. I mean, it's just to think that anything that comes out of his mouth ever is the truth it's just beyond belief. You know, I just cannot believe that people have gotten to the state. But I also think they're in too deep, too, that if you had been a Trump supporter this entire time, if he came to your house and said, you know, hi, I'm gonna shoot you or whatever, you'd still vote for him because you would look foolish not to.
Well, voted for a felon.
Yeah, how have we changed that? I mean, it used to be every movie that we've ever seen with the bad guy. Okay, the press has got the goods on the bad guy. Put it over national television. Oh, the bad guy dies of shame because the evil deeds that were done, no one's going to support the bad guy anymore. He's done. It had no effect at all. It got to show us, I think people are in too deep, and there's got to be an escape hatch. And we have to figure that out, how we can let people escape this, whether it's a made-up thing like, you know, you were really under the influence of psychotropic drugs that they put in the water, or it was a Soviet disinformation campaign, or Fox News works for these people, and that's why they tell you these things. You should be mad at them. You know, there has to be some way to let people
take the fall. Let somebody else take the fall.
Yeah, it wasn't my fault that I did this. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of Republicans, too, out in the rural areas especially, which is what I'm familiar with, there are a lot of them that know that if I ever admit that I voted Democrat, I lose all my friends and neighbors.
It's about community.
And that's a huge issue for them.
Yeah.
I ran for office a couple of years ago in heavily Republican areas, and I'd have business owners giving me money, and then when I wanted to put a sign up in their window, they go, no, we can't do that because then we'll lose all our Republican business.
Yeah.
I've had Republicans at the state level that admitted that their primary function in Olympia is begging money from special interest groups and corporations. Primary purpose of being in Olympia. Did it in front of 250 people with the media in the front row. And guess how much of that comment was made or reported on the paper the next day?
Oh.
Not a word.
Yeah.
And I talked to the editor, and he said, well, I can't do that because a lot of my advertisers are Republicans, and if I did that, I'd lose all my advertising revenue.
Yeah. Right.
So it's almost like the game is fixed out there. And I honestly think that if you get a few Republicans to finally break ranks, you're going to see a flood.
Yeah. It sure sounds like a lot of them aren't going to run again this next time around. So, and I don't know why that is. I mean, I can't imagine that their conscience has started to bother them at this point.
Well, I think that it has. I mean, okay. I have hope, and I am seeing a little change.
I read your thing, yes.
And I know that some people think that I'm, you know, Pollyanna, but I have to keep on believing.
Yeah.
And also I see a lot that's going on out there, not just in Spokane, which is also really good things are happening. Look at the election.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Ago. Yes. Yeah.
And that was amazing. I mean, we kind of flipped a few seats with that one.
Yes.
And that happened across the United States. And also in Spokane, the voting percentage was way up for a time when you expect, you know, a complete off year. For
really off year,
the
yeah.
turnout to be 25-30%, it was at 44%.
That's incredible.
It
yeah.
was incredible. And people are starting to wake up a little bit, and they're starting to see that they better be paying attention to what's going on. Especially this month, I'm sure that many of your viewers or your listeners have heard that, you know, have already seen their insurance premiums go up. I got a phone call from my son last week and told me my insurance premium doubled.
Wow.
And that's, you know, him and his wife and his two kids.
Wow.
I mean, you can't keep on affording this. You know, there's going to be a point where those families are going to have to take a good look at their budget and figure out how healthy they are, and if they cancel their insurance and go without, or if they cut it back to an absolute minimum. And, you know, the whole thing about looking at our country alone and how many people go bankrupt because of medical bills compared to so many other countries in the world. We're the only country,
yeah.
the richest country in the world,
yep.
has 750,000 a year file for bankruptcy because of their medical bills.
And our medical bills, last time I checked too, was our medical, it cost twice as much as the number two country, and that number two country was Canada. That was a few years ago. I don't know if that's still true or not. But
if you look at the U.S. healthcare system, I mean, they can blame Obamacare all they want to, but when you're paying 25-35% more than you should for people that can't pay their bills, the indigent. When you've got corporations selling you insurance and they get 20% off the top, when you've got drug companies that are selling you drugs that are 10 times what those same drugs would cost in Canada, that's why our premiums are twice as much as they are in other countries. And there's an easy fix for it. There, people have been pushing for health care for all.
Yeah.
Cover everybody. I mean, the conservatives say, well, I'm not paying for that indigent person.
Oh, you are.
Yeah. You're paying through the nose for it. Yeah. Give me a break.
Yeah.
You know, but.
Well, you know, working for the city, I believe, and this was, you know, I retired 5 years ago, but I think it was, if I remember right, $2,300 a month that the city paid towards my medical insurance per month, $2,300. And then I think I was on the hook for like $300 of this. But then when you would talk to guys about single-payer healthcare, number one, well, it's bad socialism to do something like that, which really insurance is kind of a form of its socialism in itself. But so you could, they'd say, well, I only pay $300 a month for my insurance. My taxes are going to go up to at least like $500 or $600 a month. And I go, well, yeah, but the total cost is $2,500 a month. So you could say you're going to pay $500 more a month in taxes, which leaves 1,000 here. Maybe you get the 1,000. Maybe the taxpayers in the city gets the other 1,000 bucks. So, but you know, that takes like three sentences to explain. And so no one wants, you know, their eyes have glazed over by now. And it's like, but it's just such a scam. And that they don't get that and the costs. I mean, you know, maybe this is listeners, this is the first time they're hearing how much in the city, you know, city pays for employees' health insurance. Well, it's not just the city, it's, you know, the state. Maybe you have a good employer, maybe your plumber's employed by a good employer and they have to pay this money. You pay that. You pay that in your taxes, you pay that for the products that you buy, you pay for all of that. And if you go to a company like Walmart that maybe isn't paying for it, their employees are getting subsidized health care that you're paying for. It'd be really easy. And it would also free up the economy. People could retire before they're 65, create more jobs. Mobility, where you see, I need to move to a different job. I want to do this thing, and I think my job's a dead end, and I'm really going to be good at this thing. But I have health. I won't have health care insurance, so I have to stick with this job instead of move some other place. Yeah. It's destroying our economy.
Well, it's been set up really well, and it's been set up that way for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, years and years.
Yeah.
It's just happened between Bumgarner and Trump. I mean, this has been going on since the 80s.
Yeah.
And look at where we're at now.
Well, the flip side of Bumgarner and Trump is they may be at the, like I heard one of my favorite pundits say today that Trump is the best socialist president that they've ever had in South America. because you know, the tariffs, you know, China's turned to South America to buy things.
Soybeans.
Yeah, soybeans. Yeah. And it's like, so, you know, he's enabling their economy down there. And it's absolutely true. So, you know, it's, I always have to take solace that it is these shadow side of this really evil that's being perpetrated upon us that is going to eventually, we may not be alive to see it, but it is eventually going to bring about good things. And it's because of dastardly people who have lost their way, have lost their morality, have lost their, sold their honor out to a clown who is a failure and cannot tell the truth. And you cashed in your honor for that. But you're going to be responsible for the turnaround because
absolutely.
You made it happen.
Absolutely. And they're going to be the ones, you know, I mean, his little clown show is going to be the ones in jail while he's escaped to another country.
I hope so.
Can't wait.
I hope, I know right now we're talking about affordability here, but I think the Democrats are going to make a big mistake if they just say it's all about affordability. It's not. It's about justice. And I think, you know, Kamala Harris ran on affordability. And she had great programs, first-time home buyers, things, an IVF thing that she would have actually followed up on, not like Trump. I mean, she would had things that she would have done, but people didn't care about that. They cared about visceral things. And I think there is a visceral need for justice in this country. And we can't fix our foreign relationships. We can't fix our government. We can't fix anything until we bring to justice the people that brought us here.
Exactly.
You know, and so we can talk affordability, and that's great. And, you know, part of the affordability problem is because of a lack of justice. But.
Well, the healthcare system, too, it's not going to fix itself. In fact, Trump has done this big, beautiful bill has taken us so far back that the only solution, in my opinion, is to reverse the cuts in the big, beautiful bill. But you raised a good point about employers. I've talked to people that have a job and they say, you know, my employer takes care of it, so it won't affect me. Yeah, it will. If your employer is having to pay 25 to 40% more for health insurance in 2026, guess what? You may not get that raise that you think you deserve. In fact, you'd be lucky to have a job because they may have to lay off people to be able to afford the health insurance. But the other thing, it's more fundamental than that. Manufacturing in the U.S. has tanked. And one of the reasons for that is because our employers have to pay for health insurance. So when you build a car in the U.S. and you have to add 10 or 15% for health insurance, you're not able to compete with other countries where the government in those countries is paying the health care costs. It's not being added to their product. And so you're not on a level playing field. So the health care for all, when you know we socialize medicine or the health care system altogether, then you eliminate that cost and then you can compete. Then you can bring manufacturing back to the U.S. And why employers aren't screaming bloody murder over this, I have no idea. But it's ridiculous for us to think we can compete when we're arbitrarily adding 10 and 15% to the cost of our products.
Yeah. And you know, like to your point, the guy may, you know, your healthcare costs goes up 20% and your employer has to cover that 20% or 50% or whatever it's going to be. You can look at your wages and say, man, I'm just not, I don't get raises anymore. It's like, well, in effect, you did get a raise and somebody took it from you, you know? And I just think that we've done a really bad job of informing people of that. And that's when I work for the city. I always went to the administration and said, you need to say this is part of your compensation, that it goes to this company. You know, you need to say, well, actually, you're making this much money a year, but you have to pay, $30,000 a year for insurance through us. You're obligated to pay that. And couch it in that way. But nobody wants to upset people or, ruin their day, I guess.
I would imagine that this upcoming few months is going to ruin their day. I mean,
yeah.
One thing that I find amazing, and I don't know if the brilliant minds, the critical thinkers saw it through, but the big beautiful bill does not go into effect until 2027. And I think that they thought all of us were going to just lay low, keep our mouth shut, not say anything, and just let this all happen.
After the midterms.
After the midterms. And the thing is that we've already seen huge changes in our health care and our premiums and our care alone. I mean, there's some things that are being removed right now in Spokane out of clinics and out of facilities. Physical therapy is one of them. A couple of clinics and hospitals actually moved their physical therapy programs, no longer available in those facilities. Our whole community is seeing their premiums go up. And I'm not sure if Bumgartner realized that this was going to happen before 2027, or if we were all going to lay dead and, say nothing, see nothing, and then, he gets voted in again, and then, bam, everybody's bankrupt.
But I don't get that side of what I really don't understand about this, to people that are bowing down to such evil and doing such harm to their communities, that do they know that like there's an asteroid that's going to hit the earth, so they aren't going to be held to account? Because I don't understand how they think that they will never be held to account for this. And frankly, that kind of worries me a little bit.
Well, I can see that they're a little worried that they are going to be held accountable, because you can jump and ship. How many? 24 of Republicans are not going to run for re-election in November of 2026.
Maybe that's to save their skins. Well, so we've talked. I mean, I think anybody listening to this show gets the idea that doesn't matter if you're on Medicaid or Medicare or you have the ACA or not, you may be able, if you're a horrible human being, you could say, I don't care about those people, so it doesn't matter to me. But it is going to affect you. It is going to affect everyone. And I think that everybody knows that by now. What can they, in the five minutes we've got left, what can they do about it?
Well, they're going to have to raise their voices. And Mike, you can share the story about how you got the community to raise their voices enough to switch into to make your representative, or I'm sorry, I don't remember the details. You shared it a few weeks ago about how we brought all of the people together, gave them the information, and said, you can do something about this because the people have the power to make the changes. And we have to do that. We have to be the ones to step up. We're not able to count on our representative. We're not even able to count on the government right now as a complete disaster. Mm-hmm. And but the people have the power, the people have the say. And whether that happens with a vote or with a strike or with a boycott, whatever is needed, we can change things around.
Baumgartner's primary responsibility, like a lot of politicians, is getting reelected. Yeah. We need to keep that in mind. And so right now he thinks that voters are going to have a short memory, and they won't remember that 2 years from now, when all these people are kicked off of Medicaid and things get even worse, that it wasn't his fault. He'll blame Obamacare because that's an easy thing for conservatives to accept. But the only, and these demonstrations that we have, like the No Kings rallies, they come out and say, well, it's just a minority. It's just a few people. You know, it's only 1,000 people. Well, how many people did we have at the rally here?
There was 13,000 in Spokane. But I have to share with you that I have to report the numbers to a Harvard organization called Crowd Control. And they estimated 20 million people across the United States. Now, on the news and in the media, we hear 7 million all the time. Only 7 million people came out. They're striving for 3.5%, right? Because that's when change can really happen, after 3.5%. Well, we're way past that. And in addition to that, a new report just came out. 43% of Americans have taken some steps in the resistance movement. So that means that they've written a letter, they've made a phone call, they've attended an action, an event, or a protest, and it might have just only been one little step, but they took it, and now we're up to 43% of people paying attention.
Wow, that's incredible.
Let's bring out the pitchforks and the torches and make sure they notice the next time we have a rally.
Well, and you know, I'm this whole thing about bringing justice, a really easy way to bring justice is to not deny somebody who is hurting you and hurting our nation power, to deny them power. With your vote, you can do that. You can deny them power, and you can also prevent them from getting a lifelong pension by gaining, I think, what they have to have, two or three terms to get that. And so you could do that. You could, with your vote, tell somebody, you know what? You sold your honor, you sold your credibility for a horse that you bet everything on, and you lost that bet. You are out. And that would be a really easy first step towards justice.
Yeah, absolutely. Vote, vote, vote.
Vote. That's what it's all about. Well, I hope we talked about what we needed to talk about. Was it good? Was that? Was there anything more that we needed to say?
No,
like a minute.
This was great. Okay. I thoroughly enjoyed having this conversation, and I hope there are a lot of folks out there listening. And you know, as we get into other issues, when things keep getting worse and worse and worse, I hope that you all continue to pound on the truth.
Yeah, and so again, my guests were from Spokane Indivisible. And you can look that up online if you want to find out more information. And that will be, it's a great website. You can
check SpokaneIndivisible.org. Yeah. We'll give you everything that you need.
Yep. Yeah. You may have noticed a couple of the billboards we put up around town.
I'll talk about those billboards right before, as we're going.
Well, go ahead.
So we're on number three for this year. We've got two up currently. One's on the corner of Mission and Green Street.
Oh,
It's big huge. You can see it from the moon. And
you can see his nose from the moon. You don't want to get too close. You might get your eye popped.
That Pinocchio nose.
And the other one is on the corner of Division and Francis.
All right. So, and you can look, you can be driving down I-90 and see the parade too. All right. Thanks everybody for listening to Out and About today. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, and I'll be talking with you next week. All right. Take care. Stay tuned to Amy Goodman in Democracy Now!
What a mess. I mean, America's corporatized, bureaucratic, profiteering medical system. It's as though the Marx Brothers and Franz Kafka conspired to create it. Yet, in the midst of that mess, there is one saving grace. Namely, the everyday workforce of dedicated nurses, therapists, hygienists, and other skilled, hands-on professionals who are the true heart of health care. Astonishingly, though, when Trump and company bellowed this year that they intended to reform the medical system and slash costs, guess who they targeted for cuts? Certainly not the lavishly paid CEOs and corporate price gougers who donate billions to Trump. Instead, they're going after our frontline caregivers, the one segment of the system that prioritizes patient health over corporate profits. Yet, channeling Kafka's surrealism and Groucho's slapstick, Trump and his GOP Congress are not only downgrading this vital workforce, but denigrating it. They've directed the U.S. Education Department to decree that nurses are no longer professionals. One immediate impact is that many young people who want to pursue careers in patient care will no longer be eligible for the government's student loans for advanced medical courses. This means that non-rich students will effectively be blocked from earning specialized degrees and higher salaries. In the bigger picture, Trump's insult to these essential medical professionals amounts to government-enforced plutocracy, mandating inequality as well as inferior health care. This is Jim Hightower saying, moreover, three-fourths of the health provider jobs Trump wants to degrade are filled by women. Apparently, it's part of his increasing attempts to belittle and bully women. As one nurse says of his attack on her profession, it's just a smack in the face. For information and action, go to nationalnursesunited.org. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
All right. Thank you for tuning into KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM, 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
The following program was pre-recorded.